Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of the Boldly Pursuing podcast. I am your host, Caitlin Henderson. Here we have conversations with friends who are stepping out and doing what God has called them to do in order to help encourage you to do the same. On today's podcast episode, we have my friend Tori Hope Peterson, and this conversation was just such a blessing and an eye-opener as we talk about Tori's new book, Fostered. Tori grew up in the foster care system and actually lived in 12 different foster homes throughout her childhood. She talks about how, because of Jesus, she was able to overcome every negative stereotype and assumption that attacked her identity. This conversation is for you, whether you are active with foster care in any way, shape, or form, or whether you're not. Tori just shares so much wisdom and encouragement for every single one of us. And I am so excited for you guys to hear my conversation with Tori. Hi, Tori. Welcome to the podcast.
Caitlin, thank you so much for having me. I'm honored. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you today. Thank you for doing this and coming on and sharing your story. Do you want to just kind of introduce yourself and maybe tell whatever you're comfortable with or the snippet of what you want people to know about your story?
Sure. So right now I live in Albert Lea, Minnesota with my husband. We have two biological babes and then we adopted an adult. And their names are Leander, Ezri, and Sar. And I grew up in the foster care system, which plays into a majority of what I do now. I should say I didn't grow up in the foster care system my whole life. I went into the system for the first time when I was 3 or 4 because of a drug bust. And then I was reunited with my mom and I lived with her until I was an adolescent. And then I re-entered the foster care system, lived in 12 homes, and then I emancipated the day I turned 18. No forever family. I was not adopted out of the system. But I did have a phenomenal mentor and coach who poured into me, and he ended up taking me into his family as an adult.
Did you say 12 homes?
12 foster homes total from the time that I first entered till I emancipated the system.
Oh my goodness. You said you were 3 or 4 the first time you got put into foster care?
Yeah, and I just remember living in one home. I did just live in one home. It was a short time. I mean, no time in foster care is short because you're not really supposed to be there in the first place. But, you know, the second time I went into care, it was nearly 5 years. The first time, I don't even think it was a year. My mom did her reunification plan because she did want me back.
So do you remember that? Because that's a pretty young age.
Yeah, I was young, but I remember snippets of it. I remember when I don't know if it was a SWAT team. I should probably just say uniformed men. I remember when the uniformed men busted in our door and I was laying on the couch watching Scooby-Doo. And then, you know, your door just flings open and all these men come through and they were taking bags down from my mom's wardrobe, different places. And there were bags of drugs, and I knew what they were in the way that I knew that we weren't supposed to talk about them. My mom had always told me, you know, we don't talk about this. And I remember being in traffic as a little girl and someone else bringing it up, and we were in traffic and it was only us, you know, my mom, her friend, and me in the car. But I said, hey, we're in traffic. Like, we can't talk about that, mom says. And I remember them laughing. But I didn't know why. So oh, yeah. I remember snippets like that.
Okay. Wow. So obviously May is Foster Care Awareness Month. Is that how you say it?
National Foster Care Awareness Month. Yeah.
Okay. Sure. I feel like I should know. We got our foster care certification in December of this last year, but we are so rural. We haven't had a placement yet because we're like over an hour away from like the city. So we only have been able to do like respite and stuff at this point. But so we've had a few conversations about foster care on the podcast before, but you are our first conversation from someone who has been in foster care and not on the other side, being a mom, but you've done both, right?
Yes. My husband and I had a short stint where we were foster parents. And now I said we are living in Albert Lea, Minnesota, which we are, but we're actually moving back to my hometown because we are going to be kinship caregivers. So in my first home, I was separated from my biological sister, and that biological sister is now coming to live with us.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So you're getting ready to move.
Yes. Oh my gosh, what is it? It's in like 20 days.
Less than 20 days. Goodness. Whoa. All right. So yeah. I know that this is going to be kind of a very broad question for as much time as you spent in foster care, but do you have a general, like when you think back, like what your experience was like? I mean, because some kids say, well, foster care was awful. And then some people, I've heard kids say that they're like, well, I had a great family and it wasn't, you know, I wanted to be home, but it wasn't bad. So what, like looking back, yeah. What was your, I guess?
I would say there's like two or three overarching themes. The first one I think of was that I just wasn't listened to. So as a little girl, when I went into the foster care system the first time, I had a foster sibling who the foster mom made her walk on my stomach as a consequence. Oh. And I told my caseworker and he was just like, yeah, there's nothing I can really do about that. And then when I went into the system the second time as an adolescent, my sister was abused in our first home together. And I reported that and they just separated us. And they deemed that I was hard to place because I quote unquote lied about my sister's abuse. And then there were other times in the system where abuse had occurred. And I think just for the sake of, you know, they didn't want to shut the homes down because that makes it hard mm-hmm. on caseworkers to place children. I think for that reason, you know, I was just deemed a liar. I wasn't really listened to. I never had a say in my case. And that was really challenging. And I think the other, you know, overarching theme of the foster care system is just wanting to be accepted. You know, you go from home to home and you are learning a new family. You are adjusting in the way that this family works. And it's not just to survive. You know, you have to do it to survive, but you also have to do it. You know, you want to do it because you want to be accepted and you want to fit into a family. And it was like just when you thought, okay, like things are going good. Like maybe this is going to work out. It's like you get moved and you have to start doing it all over again.
Yeah. So I'm curious, there's a lot of emotion and hard parts of your story. I know just from what you've shared on Instagram and things like that, what made you want to open up and tell your story and tell the hard parts?
So my very first advocacy event was when I was like 15 or 16, and there was a nonprofit that asked me to hold a sign for a fundraising event that they were doing. And they said, you can write on the sign whatever you want, whatever you feel applies to being a foster youth, a youth in foster care. And I wrote, stop stereotyping me, because I felt like everyone also just thought I was a really bad kid and no one ever took the time to get to know me. It was, they just based like what they knew from me moving all of the time and what my file said about me. And I wanted people to see like, I'm not a bad kid. So I wrote, stop stereotyping me on the sign. And I just remember people walking by and they had like tears in their eyes. And I was just there holding the sign. And I thought, you know, if this sign with these three words could do that much, like what could happen if I shared what my story, what God has done in my life? And I felt like that moment, he just planted a seed in me. You know, I didn't know that I would be doing what I'm doing now, but I definitely think he did plant a seed in me that said, the story is not going to be wasted. The suffering is not in vain. Mm. And then as I got older and I kind of understood my testimony more of what God had done in and through me and what he could do through other people, I just started sharing more, you know, like with friends and family and my church community. And then my church was like, we want you to share your testimony on stage. And I was like, of course. And then like for Orphan Sunday, they're like, we want you and your foster mom to come up and talk about your relationship. And, you know, just the people would come up and I would just see the impact that it had on people. And it was so encouraging to me, like, okay, this pain, the suffering, it is not in vain. And then I went to college and I ran track and I loved track. It's what got me through school, but I didn't really speak or do any of that. I was just focused on getting through school. And then when I graduated, I had this idea that I was going to go to law school because I wanted to do advocacy. And I thought to be an advocate, you had to be like a GAL. That's the only way that I had heard that word used. And then I actually saw another former foster youth doing advocacy on Capitol Hill, and she was sharing her story that way. And that was very inspirational to me because I realized there was more ways to do advocacy than just being a GAL or being a CASA. And I could see the way God had used me for speaking, for writing. I had had a blog when I was like 19 that people seemed to be pretty impacted by. And I just kind of looked at, okay, the gifts that God had already given me and said, okay, that's what I want to do to change the lives of those in the foster care system.
Yeah. I want to back up for just a second to something that you said a minute ago and that I've heard you talk about before when you were talking about, you know, like the case file and saying, don't stereotype me and people seeing you as like, quote unquote, bad kid. Will you talk a little bit about I've heard you relate to it as like a first date when you're handed a case file for a child and how maybe that kind of needs to change, how that's being done.
Yes, it does need to be changed. Yeah. Caitlin. We got to do something. So think about like your first impression with somebody. You know, when you have a bad first impression, you kind of feel it. Like if you're in a job interview, you're like, oh, I'm not going to get that
job. Yeah, you know.
Yeah,
you know how it went.
Like, your heart kind of sinks to your stomach and you're like, oh, that sucks. But you're also like, okay, I'm going to do better next time. Like I'm going to learn from this experience. But when you're a youth in foster care, you don't even get a first impression. Someone gives a file to your foster parent of the worst things that have ever happened to you, the worst things you've ever done. And it actually only gets worse. There's no way that you can improve because you've moved another home. And so in that context, like it has to be worse for some reason. And, you know, even if it's just, oh, you moved another home because of the foster parents, that's still more trauma. And so in every case, a foster youth steps into a home with a worst first impression. And then they are expected as children with compounded generational trauma and pain to prove to their foster parents that first impression, it was actually just a fluke. Like that's not the truth. And so we're putting this huge weight on these kids while they're trying to form lasting relationships with their parents on top of all their trauma. And I think it does, obviously, I know it does so much damage because I believe that healing begins and ends with identity. When we know who we are, what God has called us to do, that we have a plan and a purpose for our lives, you know, we can get through the suffering. We know that our suffering isn't in vain, but when we have these negative labels placed over us that we can't work out of, no matter what we do, then we think, well, what's the point? You know, there's no reason. And I think that when there's no reason to improve, no reason to live a good life, you know, I think you're not motivated, you're discouraged. And I think it's one of the huge things that is very underrated that we don't talk about, that it's a way that we're failing youth in foster care that we don't take into account. We don't talk about it.
Do you think there's anything, I mean, until the rules and legislation can get changed to where that is not the first impression that these foster parents are not being handed these case files, is there anything in the meantime that you think foster parents can do to help take that weight off of these kids that know these people were just handed my file and know my whole past.
Girl, yes. Let me tell you about something. So I founded something. It's a project called F the File, and it starts for Fight the File. And it was founded so that we can fight the combats of the effects that the file has on youth in foster care. And so we have a whole PDF of how you do the project, but basically you just rewrite your kid's file, and you don't ever have to even see their file, but you write who they truly are, who God says they are, how you perceive them, their best characteristics, their talents, and you put it in a file folder and you give it to them. And we're doing this because there's a book, it's called The Body Keeps the Score. And the author says that when it comes to healing trauma in our bodies, it's good if we take medication, it's good if we go to therapy. But he says the number one most effective way that we can heal trauma in our bodies is by having lived experiences that contradict the traumatic event that caused the trauma.
And oh, so that's good.
Obviously, you know, the file is this file that says these sad, terrible things about us that aren't true and that are hurtful. That's traumatic. So how do we literally contradict that in the flesh? Is we're going to do the opposite. And it's been so, so amazing, Caitlin, to see the impact that it has had on families and parents and kids. The feedback that we've gotten has been just incredible. And more nonprofits are taking it and handing off the project to their parents to participate in. And it's been amazing. F the file.
F the file. I was going to ask, okay, because I know we have a lot of people that listen that foster. I've got a lot of friends and family that foster, and I've never heard of this. So this is, I'm so glad you brought that up. F the file, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, friends. I am sure that by now, probably most of you have heard me talk about my book, Faith, Farming, and Family, that released earlier this year with Waterbrook Publishing. And let me just tell you, releasing a book is one of the hardest yet most rewarding things I've ever done. But the best part has been hearing your stories about what the book has done for you. We have had hundreds of messages pour in saying that the book has changed your life, which, y'all, my mind is just blown at those messages, or how it's caused you to grow in your relationship with God, or changed your marriage, or your parenting, or how you look at hospitality, or so many different things. And I give all the glory to God for that. But I wanted to tell you guys that right now, Amazon has the book on a major sale, like the lowest I've ever seen it, but they are low in stock. So if you have not ordered it yet, now is a great time to do so. We've also been hearing that so many of you are going to be using the book this fall to do Bible studies or book clubs. And I want you to know I purposely wrote the book to be easy to do that. So now is a great time to get stocked up on them. And I also wanted to tell you guys, the question I get asked the most is, I'm not a farmer. Is this book for me? And let me just shout it from the mountaintops. Yes. Yes, friend. Yes. Like, I very specifically wrote this book so that if you are in the middle of New York City, you are going to walk away with just as much as if you're on a farm like me. So all the stories are from our life on the farm. And let me tell you, there are some crazy, there's hilarious stories, and there are some heart-wrenching stories in there. But at the end, it's all down to the lessons within the story, lessons that we can all relate to. So yes, you do not need to be a farmer to walk away getting so much out of this book. But I also just want to tell you guys, thank you. Thank you for your messages of kindness and encouragement, and for letting me know how the book has helped you. I truly appreciate every single message, comment, review, order, and share. And it just means so much to me. So you can head over to Amazon and get it on sale, or just click the link in the show notes. And now back to today's episode. So tell me, I'm curious, in sharing your story, which I know this goes for any of us, but other people are always so entangled into our stories, right? Like, how do you navigate telling your story with not telling everyone else's story at the same time? Like, did you have to be really careful with how you share your story?
Yeah, I try to protect people. At the same time, though, I'll be honest with you. I once had a mentor that said, if you don't want to be a bad character in someone's story, don't be a bad person. Mm-hmm. And I think about that a lot. You know, protecting kids is different. I don't tell the stories of my adult son. I don't tell the stories of my sister, of the things that have been done to them in the explicit way, just in the ways that it has affected me, but really not explicitly. But when it comes to the adults in my life, I do think about that. And I try to apply it to myself. If I don't want to be a bad character in someone's story, then I'm going to be a good, loving person.
I wondered, I've heard that quote, and I wondered as I was asking the question if you were going to bring that up, because I've heard so many people use that, and it's true, because I think it's such a balance that you have to achieve, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it's just tricky, but I think you do it with incredible just grace. So
Thank you.
I don't know, watching I mean, even just from following you on Instagram, seeing the way that you open up and share your stories and the impact that it's making on people, I just think our stories hold so much power, and that when we share them and bring the hard parts to light, they lose so much shame. And I feel like, you know, when parts of our story hide in the dark, I feel like that's when the enemy like really has a hold over us. And I don't know if you have noticed that too, but when you can bring them to light, it's like, you know, the light shines through the darkness.
Yes, that is so beautiful and absolutely so true. And, you know, throughout my life, Caitlin, you know, my mom had so many secrets, and she encouraged us to, you know, keep secrets for her. And that's just not the kind of life that I want to live. I don't want my kids to have to live that, because if we're keeping secrets, if we're keeping things in the dark, that gives the enemy a strong foothold. And that's where he works. The enemy works in the dark, but God works in the light. And so I would rather make a mistake, make a fool of myself, be mean to someone and talk about it so that we can all learn from it, than hide it. And I really feel like when we don't do that, we are really wasting the power of God and all that God has done in and through our lives. And that's why I tell the story, because I believe if I don't, then I'm wasting God's goodness that he has just poured over me. And I don't want to do that.
Oh, that gave me goosebumps. I feel like really too, that's such an inspiration for like anyone who's listening that is afraid to tell their story. I mean, you're completely right. When we tell them, we are allowing God to work through us. We are allowing him to bring redemption to the hard parts of our stories and situations that if we just absolutely refused to let him into, we would miss out on so much of that beauty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I want to know what, there's so many misconceptions around foster care, even just, you know, us being new to this, and not having a long-term placement yet. What's some of the biggest misconceptions you think that people have about kids in foster care, or foster care in general, even?
I think the way that we want to help youth in foster care, or the way that we do help youth in foster care in our society, we're not doing it right. I think that lots of the big nonprofits that we give money to for youth in foster care, they're giving youth products like bikes, trips to Disneyland, things that don't actually, you know, add balm to the wound. We don't address the root issue. So we treat kids like a 501c3 nonprofit. Like, let's just put it in a business way. Like, we're like, let's throw money at it
and see if it improves. But like, you know, children aren't charities. We have to treat them more like we have to invest into them. Like we need to sit with them and go where they go and love them where they are with whatever we have. Because, you know, when we try and love kids with stuff we don't have, you know, with gifts we don't have, with characteristics we don't have, then it's not authentic. But kids like these kids who are have been through so much trauma, they're hypervigilant, you know, they are craving authenticity and love with people who will just sit with them, will be just be with them wherever they are. And so I think one of the biggest ways that we're failing youth in foster care is, you know, just I think we treat them like they're charity cases and they're not. And, you know, I see it on social media too, youth in foster care and organizations, they'll put things on their story and be like, you know, this is what I need for my apartment, or this is what I need for this and that. And, you know, these are working adults who are doing good in life, but people will donate to them because it makes them feel like they're contributing to something, when actuality, like you're not digging in to the ground to discover what is the root issue so that these children can actually bear fruit.
And I'm sure, I mean, the kids can feel like when they feel like a charity case, right? Like they're not blind to that.
Yeah. I remember the first time so, you know, there's that big duffel bag movement in the foster care system, and I am very taboo. People don't like me when I say it, but I am done with the duffel bag movement. We don't need that. I would rather carry around a trash bag than, you know, not be heard. Like, create spaces where youth can be heard. Create spaces where youth can have people pour into them and genuinely love them with all that money you're using for a duffel bag. But the first time I ever got a duffel, and this is probably why I'm like so anti-duffel bag. First time I ever got one, I was probably 14 in the foster care system, and it was a purple duffel bag, which is my least favorite color because it reminds me of Barney, and I think Barney's a little bit creepy. And
I loved Barney when I was little.
I loved him when I was little, but as I got older, I was like, dang, that dinosaur is kind of weird, though. That
You're right, weird. Yeah.
And then there was shampoo and conditioner in there, and it had a dollar sticker on there from Dollar General. And this was a multi-million dollar. Like, now this nonprofit is a multi-million dollar nonprofit, the one who gave me the duffel bag. And that shampoo and conditioner, I couldn't have used that on my hair. Like, no one can see me on a podcast, but I am a mixed girl with a Irish black girl afro, and it is crazy. And my shampoo cost way too much money. I'm embarrassed to say it, but it's because, like, that's what I have to use for my hair to even look halfway tamed. And so,
And you know, the people who are buying those products and putting them in there, probably they're not even using that on their own hair.
Right. Like, oh, that's true. Well, yeah. I never even thought about that part of it. Yeah, that's true. And yeah, so I think I'm just like, how are you a multi-million dollar nonprofit and you're not giving youth what they actually need? It's just really heartbreaking to me.
So when we're talking about, like, you coming in and sitting with these kids and actually trying to get to the root and building these relationships, do you have to just be a foster parent to do that? Or do you have to be certified, or are you able to just find a kid to love on? I mean, how does that work from that perspective?
I always say, I think we need to use what we have right where we are. So the most impactful person, there's two people who are the most impactful people in my life. The first one is my track coach. Did he have any certification other than a coaching certification? Maybe. I don't even know if he had a coaching certification. No, he didn't. He wasn't a teacher in the schools. He worked in a factory during the day, and then he came to coach us at night. But he used what he had, right? He was a runner himself in high school, and he used the knowledge he had right where I was, right where I love to be. And he poured into me and he loved me. And the second person was she wasn't a youth leader. She was like a chaperone in the youth church. And she would invite me to her house once a week with a bunch of other young women who had come from harder places. And she would, what did she have? She had a van. So she would go and pick all of us up. There, some holy work has been done in church vans, okay? she picked us up. And I remember always telling her, I want to be the first person you pick up and the last person you drop off, because I didn't want to go home. And she always did that, even when it was outside of her route. And she, there are so many things. I have so many stories about that woman. There was one time we were at her house for a small group. She called it small group. So I said, okay, this is a Bible study, but we don't ever read the Bible. Like, what are we doing? We're just doing a craft. And she said, well, sometimes you don't always have to tell people about Jesus. Sometimes you just have to show people about Jesus.
Mm.
And this woman, that's what she lives it out like no one else. She is a true angel. And those two people have had the biggest impact on my life. And they were not foster parents. They were not respite care providers. And so I truly believe if you come into contact with kids, you never know if they're a foster child unless they tell you or unless someone else tells you. And so use what you have right where you are to just be a lover of people. Like, because that's what being a true disciple of Jesus is. Like, true disciples of Jesus, we're just professional lovers of people.
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad you said that. Yes. That's so good. And I just, like, that's how we should all strive for. Like, when you were describing her, I was just like, yeah, that's how I want to live. Like, that's how we should all strive to live, in the ways that we should try to love the people around us. Like, yeah. I love that. So will you talk a little bit about, so you say you aged out or you were emancipated, or is it the same thing?
Yeah. So aged out, that's a great question. Aged out and emancipated are the same thing. Kind of. Well, okay. So you can actually emancipate when you're 16 in some states, but that is very hard to do. You have to be a very high achieving youth. You have to have a job. They want you to have graduated high school. Like, no one really emancipates. I mean, there are some kids that do emancipate before they're 18, but really emancipating and aging out is basically the same thing in the foster care realm, because you turn 18, and you age out of the system, or you emancipate out of the system. And there is this myth that when you are emancipated from the system, you get kicked out. Or when you turn 18, age out, you get kicked out. That's not true. All states have extended foster care now. So in some states, that's until 21. Some it's until 24, and some until 26. So
I did not know that.
There was a time like 10 years ago or more now that kids got kicked out the day they turned 18, but that is not the case anymore. Kids have the option to stay in the foster care system. Foster parents can still be getting paid for that child if they're housing them. And that is because, you know, they did see the effects that this was having on children experiencing homelessness, not able to finish high school and go to college. And so that's why they changed this policy and law and built out extended foster care in every state. But the problem is that most foster youth have been so burned by the foster care system that they decide to emancipate and leave anyway. So that's what my case was. I could have done extended foster care until I was 21 in my state. And they were kind of just, I think extended foster care started happening in 2012. I emancipated in 2014. And so it was really kind of just coming on the scene. And there really weren't, now, like, if you do extended foster care, you can get like an apartment and they'll pay for it. And they help with college. Like, I didn't have any of that. And one of the rules, this was the rule that I was like, I'm totally leaving. I couldn't get my driver's license until I had emancipated out of the system. So I was 18.
Really?
Yeah, when you're in the system in most states, you still can't get your driver's – you can't get your driver's license at 16 because it's considered a liability if you're in custody of the state.
Yeah. Okay.
So I was like, I want to get my driver's license. Like, I'm 18 and all of my friends – I like was riding the bus to school as a junior, and all of my friends were driving to school, and – you know, you just always feel like so lame. And I know now, like as an adult, that really didn't matter. But as a kid, like it really feels like it matters. Like, it feels really heavy. Like people are looking at you like you're, you know, like you're not a cool kid. You're lame and you're like still a bad kid.
Like, and it just always went back to like, I'm that bad kid, that bad foster kid that has to ride the bus because I can't drive a car.
I mean, I feel like driving is just such a, it's like the biggest thing when you're a teenager. Like that's really what every kid looks forward to is like getting your driver's license.
Well, that's like the big milestone when you're a teenager. And if you don't drive, then the next milestone is just being an adult at 18. And so I did choose to emancipate the day I turned 18.
Okay. So can I ask your last foster home that you had before you emancipated, were you with them for like a while? And did you have a good relationship with them?
I don't remember how long I was with her. It was probably like, so I got with her right before the school year started. And then I emancipated in February because that's when my birthday is. And I actually did have a really good relationship with her. So this was probably the saddest part about emancipating because I really did love my foster mom, but she had to adhere to the county policies, the foster care rules, and she didn't want to lose her license. And I totally get that. Like you put, and I was her first ever placement. She did such an amazing job. Aww. She was, so I was in my 11th foster home. That was the foster home before my last one. And the foster parents proclaimed the name of Jesus, but then they abused their children behind closed doors. And that really confused me. Like I was like, because that my heart, God really started to work in my heart at that time. And I wanted to know like who he was, but who I heard him to be at church was not who I saw him to be at home. And that really upset me because I thought this God is just a God who wants me to put on his religion as a mask. And I didn't want a mask. Like I really wanted to be known and I really wanted to be loved because I wasn't. I just moved from home to home to home and I wasn't known. I wasn't loved. And that's what I wanted. And so then I moved to my 12th foster home. That's my last one before I emancipated. And my foster mom just was so humble, confessed her mistakes, explained things really well to me, and lived a life of just genuine sacrifice. And I was like, oh, like, this is what it's like to live a life for Jesus. This is what it's like to be that professional lover of people. And I wanted that love in me because I was mean in high school. I was angry. I was a bully. And I was like, I don't want to be like this anymore. Like, I want that love in my heart so that I'm not causing any more hurt because yeah, hurt people and we can have empathy for that, but heal people help heal people. And I want to be the latter.
Yeah, that's so good.
And yeah, so my foster mom, I did have a good relationship with her because she really, along with my track coach and my youth leader, they kind of all were stewarding my heart at the same time so that I would come to know Jesus. So leaving her was, you know, it was not hard in the moment because you're like, oh, I just hate the foster care system. I just want to leave. But then once I was gone, I was like, man, she was a good one. Like, she was a good one.
Yeah.
She was one of the good ones.
Do you still keep in touch with her?
Yeah, we still talk. So I'm moving back to my hometown and I told her, I was like, you're the first person I'm going to host in my house. Like, we're going to have dinner. And so, yeah.
I love that. That's like a one of those like full circle God moments, you know, where I just imagine on all sides, that's just like a sweet moment. So, okay, Tori, tell me, what's your overall goal in sharing your story? Like, what do you hope people walk away with?
I think it goes back, you know, people are like, oh, Tori, your story's so amazing. And like, the more I tell it, the more I realize it has nothing to do with me and everything to do with all these people who loved me, like all these people who God put in the right place at the right time to steward my heart towards him. And so if there's anything that I want people to take away from my story, to take away from me telling it, I just want them, it goes back to being a professional lover of people with what they have right where they are. Elevating the voices of those who do not have voices and not being a voice for the voiceless because everyone has a voice. We just need to listen to it. And that's part of loving people. And I, you know, I love hospitality means so much to me because it was all these people, you know, who let me into their home and taught me how to live that has molded me into the person I am today. And so I think that just using what you have right where you are to be a professional lover of people. That's what I hope people will do with my story.
I love that. Okay, well, go tell everyone. First, you can tell them your book comes out in August, you said?
Yes, it comes out August 30th. Okay,
tell us about the book. Tell us if we can go pre-order and where and how everyone can find you so they can connect with you.
Yes, yes, yes. Please pre-order my book. Pre-orders are super important for authors. And I really feel like they're especially more important for this book because when I was in the system, I couldn't have social media. Social media is my biggest platform. The only way that youth in foster care will find this book, if they're not on social media, is if they see it in the stores. And so pre-orders is what gets books in stores. That's how, I didn't know that's how it worked. I seriously thought that like every book at Barnes, like every book in the world was at Barnes and Noble.
I thought that too. And then I published my book and I feel like I fell into this hard reality of like, oh, you got to fight for it.
Fight for that spot at Barnes and Noble. And I titled my book Fostered because I wanted youth in foster care to be able to look at that and say, oh, like that's, you know, I want it to be quick and they could quickly identify like, oh, that book is for me. So please pre-order my book. It's called Fostered. You can do it on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Walmart, Target, any of your favorite book purchasing places, and do it before August 30th. But if you don't do it before August 30th, do it before anytime.
what age range would you say?
Probably like teenagers and adults. So when I got into this realm of advocating for youth in foster care, I really thought it was purely for youth, for adolescents, for the kids who were coming after me. And as I've advocated more, I've seen that a lot of it, actually a majority of what I do is for foster parents, adoptive parents, and nonprofits, consulting them and teaching them. So I totally wrote the book for the youth in foster care struggling to find their identity in Christ and to understand who they are and what they're called to. But I've had foster parents read the early release for endorsements, and they're just like, this has taught me so much. It's really for all those people and anyone who loves a good survivor memoir. Yeah, I loved survivor memoirs when I was a kid.
And so I'm just thinking, you know, if people want to get involved and help in some way, we can go pre-order a bunch of copies and then get them to the kids that we know that need them or the foster parents that we know. Like, what a good little way to support you and still, you know, hopefully do a little bit of good if someone is looking for a small way that they can step in and help.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So where can we find you on Instagram? Make sure that people know how we can connect with you.
My Instagram is Tori Hope Peterson. Peterson is S-E-N, not S-O-N, like your name, Caitlin. So Tori Hope Peterson, and you can find me at ToriHopePeterson.com, Tori Hope Peterson on TikTok. It's all the same.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on and just being so authentic and vulnerable with your story. And congratulations on the book. I'm so excited for people to get to listen to this and to get to go pre-order it. So just thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Caitlin. It was fun. I loved getting to talk to you. Thank you.
Same. Hey, friends, I hope you loved this episode of the Boldly Pursuing podcast. And if you have a minute, would you do us a huge favor and head over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and a review? That is so helpful for helping new people find the podcast, and we would so appreciate it. Hey, friends, until next time, keep boldly pursuing.